of it. Okay, Parshas Bo, Tavshin Ayin Aleph. Parshas Bo has a million different themes in it, and many different themes have been discussed in the past, and what we're going to focus on today hopefully will bring together various strands of ideas that we have spoken about over the course of the year or a number of years. Hopefully some of the ideas will sound familiar, but they will be developed with new additional depth, hopefully, and more understandings of what we're working with here. Don't forget what we spoke about last week. Last week we spoke about, and the week before that, the idea that Moshe had to come to Klal Yisrael as a messenger, and using the words Ani Hashem, basically convince them to transform themselves, specifically to remove them from themselves their idols, which, although they did not succeed in doing, Hashem still took them out of Mitzrayim, and yet he couldn't take them directly to Eretz Yisrael. He stopped at Marah, and there he gave them another opportunity to start to be initiated in Torah and mitzvahs, right? And we said that the word Marah, the Shorish is Mar, it was difficult. It's difficult to rid yourself of the natural way you operate, of the things you're familiar with, of the things you have security in, and the things you trust, namely their Avodah Zarah and their whole way of seeing the world, to break it all down and start to allow yourself to see things from a different perspective. The word is Mar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you accept Torah, from here on it will become sweet. Jump in, and it will transform you, and you'll appreciate it with time. Now, we also talked about the week before that Emes Me'eretz Titzmach, that truth springs from the ground up. And we talked about the idea that truth has to wait. It eventually emerges by a process of elimination, right? Remember this idea? And these two ideas go together because truth slowly reveals itself by virtue of the fact that everything else that claims to be true and the solution and pleasant in the end is not pleasant, not a solution, and not true. And that learning curve is painful. It's painful in our own lives and what we hope, you know, what we believe is the way we should conduct ourselves, who we are. We take a certain trust in the way we see things and the way the world around us operates and the givens in the regular, predictable, you know, ways of things. And we, to break it all down or to watch it break down in our own lives or in history, and to let the truth begin to kind of reveal itself, is not always an easy process. And we call that process, really, in a philosophical, spiritual sense, the process of achieving a geula, a redemption of mind, of spirit. In other words, an ability to see the truth always comes via a gulus. That's how it goes. It comes via a gulus, which we call an exile. An exile means where you are taken out of your surroundings, out of your familiar world, out of what you're used to. It's ripped away from you. You're thrown into a new situation. You have to deal with it, and you have to recognize that through it, you will begin to learn new things and truths. So what we see is that just like the day follows the night, and the geula follows the gulus, and truth follows all the sheker, and pleasantness and satisfaction follows the turmoil, and after you finish crying, you feel more at peace. That's how it goes. And here, in this week's Parsha, okay, we have, towards the end of the Parsha, really, a couple of different terms that are used to describe how we will give over the story of what happened on Pesach to our children. And specifically, if we look into it, you'll see that these words, these terms that are used, help describe this as what we just talked about, this transition from a comfortable place to a less and less comfortable place as the truth emerges. But in the end, that process is ultimately critical, necessary, and in the end, full of joy. But the process is definitely uncomfortable to break down all the assumptions, all those securities we have, all the ways we like to see things, and to question everything. So, for example, technically speaking, how do we see this message kind of conveyed through the words the Torah chooses to use to describe how we're going to give over the story of what happened in Mitzrayim to the Jewish people? What happened here? So, first of all, you look, I'm just going to compare a couple of psukim. First pasuk is Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Chaf Zayin, chapter 12, pasuk 27. 356. How do you find that so fast? Okay. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Chaf Zayin. And here it's the following is in the context, right, of one thing, of Hashem passing over the Egyptian homes to allow the Jews to survive. In other words, basically, distinguishing between the non-Jews and the Jews, between who is Klal Yisrael and who is not. Regarding that, the Torah says, Vahaya, and it will be, Ki Yomru Aleichem Benechem. Your children will say to you, what are we doing all of this? Why are we giving a carbon Pesach, really? You're going to answer specifically regarding this issue, that Hashem passed over the houses and selected Klal Yisrael. Okay, that's the first thing. There'll be an amira. There's going to be a statement. Amira is not a she'ela question, which we're going to see soon. Amira is not the same as haggadah, you should tell. Amira is your children will say. Saying it has a certain connotation. It's out there. It's kind of passive. It's a recognition of something. It's not a call to action. It's not a demand. It's not interactive. The person who's saying something is not necessarily seeking a response from the listener. They're just saying something, right? And they're saying, what is this avod? That's a form of a question, like, what are we doing this? And the answer to this statement, sort of, it's a question that's phrased as that the Torah describes kind of as a statement. Statement in terms of what we said, it's out there, it's recognized that there's, you know, this avoda represents something. It represents that Klal Yisrael are distinguished from the nations, that we have a separate mission. So the first idea we're saying here is that the notion, first to be understood, is that Klal Yisrael have a mission, and it's a fact, it's what it is, it's observable. It seems to be, you know, something that we can state. It's an amira. Klal Yisrael have a mission. It's self-evident. But then the Torah goes on to talk about more details than thus just the distinction of Klal Yisrael from the nations. More than that happened on Pesach. It's not just that Klal Yisrael had a mission. Much more happened. And that you get into Perek Yud Gimel. Perek Yud Gimel starting with Pasuk Aleph, we start talking about that we have to sanctify the firstborn. Because something happened here that relates to the firstborn, more than just selecting Klal Yisrael. Okay? What happens here is there is a Chozek Yad, a powerful hand, which means miracles, as you know. An outstretched hand, right? That's miracles and wonders. God breaking into history. And with that, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in the spring, which has a lot to do with what we spoke about 2 weeks ago, or in Parsha Shemos. The spring represents when the seed, which is broken down and disintegrated, and looks like it doesn't even exist anymore because it had to survive a cold, dark, gullus, so to speak, winter, springs to life. That's the spring. That's exactly what happened to Klal Yisrael. That's how it always works, right? So it's the spring, and in the springtime came great miracles and wonders, and they were there to bring you to this land that Hashem has promised you, and you should eat matzah on this day, and no chametz, and then we say v'higadeta lebincha. It's a whole different lashon. Now about this, you have a responsibility to convey, not that they just observe something, but you must convey to them, not just that Klal Yisrael is selected. Yes, we have a mission. But it's much more than that. That we have, in an act of almost, another act of in a certain sense, a violent act. HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed, broke down their firstborns, their concept of what their leaders were doing. The firstborns were the leaders, the mission of the leaders. It broke it all down, their assumptions, their way of living in this world, their way of setting up their spiritual views, their national views, destroyed it all, replaced their firstborn with our firstborn, with great miracles, interfered in history, and you must convey that strongly to your children. And conveying the Higadita always implies you demand a reaction. You don't just convey it so they'll say, okay, that's nice. Okay, it means now because of it, you have to do something. You have an obligation. It's not just that you're selected, but now that you're the firstborn, that means you're the firstborn of the rest of the children. You have a responsibility to the younger siblings. You become now the light to the nations. You have to set an example. You have to talk about not just that there's everybody in Klal Yisrael have a mission, that we have a role to play, but that this role demands that everybody else learn about it, recognize it, respond to it, react to it. God is calling, demanding from mankind. That's the Higadita. Higadita is also always a much stronger lashon, a lashon of that expresses interaction. But then it goes further, and there's another lashon, and that's the one we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about. The next lashon is pasuk yedalet. V'haya ki yishalcha bincha machar. And it will be when your son asks you. Now, this is not coming from the observer. Amira is from the observer. Okay, they say, oh, you know, this clearly implies something. And you say, yeah, it implies a Klal Yisrael distinguished and unique, different. The Higadita says, and you know how different we are? Let me tell you about that difference. We experience revelation, and we have a role to play. And our firstborns are, in other words, our leadership. That concept of how we lead is going to be radically different, destroy all the other concepts that pre-existed. And we have an obligation. But now, all of a sudden, the observer, the child asks a question, says, Mazos. Now, this question here, Mazos, which, by the way, ultimately is ascribed in the Haggadah to the Tam, and also the Lashon is ascribed to the Chacham, okay? But without that, without going, we've spoken about that in the past too, but Mazos is not saying, okay, so now what are my obligations? It's a whole different kind of question. It's much deeper. What is it all about? I want to get to the core. It's not just now I know. I have a mission. I have an obligation. God gave me direction, told me specifically. But now, Mazos, what is this? I want to know much more. I want to know the secrets. I want to know the word Zos. Like Klal Yisrael said on the Yam, Zeh Keli, this is my God. I want to know the essence. I want to know I want to look behind the veil. Now, this She'ela, okay, this question that the child is going to ask you, that is precious to us because the entire Pesach Seder is set up around questions and answers. Yes, there is V'higadita Lebincha. You should convey this message to your children. But we know that it's not enough just to sit there and talk to your children. We do all kinds of things at the Seder to make them ask questions. We encourage them to ask. What is the purpose and what is the power of the question? The power of the question is not just to, let's say it this way. There are many types of questions. Questions like, questions that just kind of like challenge. What is this? That's the type of question, a challenging question. A question that just needs, like, you know, you're asking for directives. What should I do now? Okay, so you get information. That's the kind of question, too. That's not the question of the Seder. The question of the Seder is explain more deeply. Let me understand the inner workings of everything. Convey to me the truth in a way that I could understand it. Now, the whole nature of the Geula and how we commemorate it and how we extend it through the, you know, from generation to generation is through questions. It's very, very striking. Okay, and this my husband pointed out to me. I told you the secret weapon is Heshi, right? The whole Golus, the whole prediction of the Golus, which we spoke about last week, the Bris Ben Absarim, when Hashem told Avraham, your children are going to go to Golus for 400 years, it was a response to a question. And now we have to think very, in a subtle way, very carefully. Was Hashem just answering a question? Or did Avraham's question create the answer? Hashem said, yeah, that's what you want, then the only way you're going to get to know it is if you're going to go through Golus. What was Avraham's question? Was he just asking for information? Or was he asking, was he drawing out a whole new reality? Because he was not just inquiring, he was requiring more. So for example, here's what the Gemara says. This is Gemara Nedarim, Daf Lamed Beis Amar Aleph. So there's a little bit of a machlokas here. And it says, and the question is, Mipnei Ma, because of why? Nenash Avram Avinu, was Avram punished? Okay. V'nishtabdu banav l'mitzrayim masayim v'eser shanim. Why? Because of what? Was Avram punished? And his children became enslaved in Egypt 210 years. It's a punishment. Okay? So, there's one opinion. And then Shmuel Amar. Mipnei, because shehifriz al midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar b'ma eida ki ershena, that he inquired too deeply, you might say, about the midos of Hashem, the way Hashem conducts the world, when he asked, how will I know that I will inherit it? Let's go back to that for a second. It's in Lech Lecha. Okay, this is the question that precipitated the Bris Ben Hapsarim. What page is it?
68.
How do you know that?
Because you were going there, so I looked.
Okay. Wow. So, here's what happens. If you read these carefully, actually it's 66. We'll go back a little more. Hashem tells him, you will have a child, takes him outside, we're in Pesukim 5, 6, takes him outside, tells him you can't count the stars, so your children will also be so numerous. And he trusted Hashem, and it was considered an act of righteousness. So we know Avram is trusting Hashem. So the next question that comes up cannot be a lack of trust. So we have to look at it in a new light. So then Hashem says, "Vayomer." Let's read the whole introduction. "Vayomer, love." Now this is a whole new topic because they're in the middle of talking. So if they're already in the middle of talking, and then there's a new introduction, it says "Vayomer, love" means Hashem is now introducing something new, the next level. The first level is he's going to have a great nation come from him, like, and they will illuminate the world like the stars. That's done. Next, now there's something else to deal with. But Yomer Elav, Ani Hashem, and what does it sound like? Asher Hotei Sicha Me'eretz Me'or Kastim. Sorry, right? That's what it sounds like, right? Same words. Remember when Hashem, just last week we talked about it, sent Moshe to say Ani Hashem. And I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. And we said that Ani Hashem was not just just information, an introduction. That was a demand, as Yechezkel then clarifies for us, saying Ani Hashem is the same as saying, get rid of your idols, break down the way you see the world, the way you do things, your security blanket, the way you operate, just destroy it all, get rid of it, divest yourselves of it, leave yourselves empty. Right? Leave yourselves vulnerable. Leave yourselves open. In other words, it's a breaking down. It's a removal. So that's the same thing here. He says, Tavram, Ani Hashem. Asher say, Sicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That word, I am Hashem, means and nothing else. And you have to come to know that. And I'm going to give you this land, Larishta. L'seis L'chai. You know why I took you out of Orkastim? To give you this land to inherit. Now, talking about inheriting this land, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael would be the land of all the Giloy Shechina. Inheriting this land is also a euphemism for getting to a place, in other words, getting to a place of existence where you have a constant state of revelation, where you see the truth. So then Avram says, Vayomer Asher Avram, Bame Eda, how will I know Ki Ershena? Let's be very careful here. It can't be, he's saying, well, how will I know that I'm going to inherit Eretz Yisrael? As we just proved. It already said that he trusts Hashem. So he's not saying, really, how will I know what you're saying is true? If Hashem has just said to him, Ani Hashem, that's Das. That is coming to a state of knowledge on a very high madrega, of intimate knowledge, of experiential knowledge, which is also called inheriting this land, which this land is a place of miracles, of revelation. Avram is asking, Bameh, through what? Ba. You know the word beis, the prefix, it's in or with. With what? In other words, with what experiences, with what process will I come to know Hashem on this level? Bameh, through what? Through what experiences, through what process, through what transformation? What will I have to go through to know? Das means real das. And ki doesn't necessarily mean that, in the way that how will I know that I'll do it? Ki has a lot of meanings. When, be or state of being. Bameh Eda, through what process will I come to das and ki, that I will truly inherit or acquire this madrega? And he's not talking for himself, he's talking for Klai Yisrael. In other words, Avraham is in Sefer Bereishis. When we talk about Sefer Bereishis, it's very important. This goes back to now what we started with, about Amira. When Hashem speaks to the world, and we've spoken about this in the past, this is a development of the idea. When Hashem, the way Hashem conveys any information to the world in the entire Sefer Bereishis is with Amira. Amira, we said, is a statement. It doesn't demand a response. It means that what Hashem is conveying is knowable, but it doesn't demand that a person react to it. Everything in Sefer Bereishis is Vayomer Hashem, except, by the way, one thing, which we've also spoken about, Vayedaber Hashem El Noach Tzeim in HaTeva, but that's not for now. Everything else is Amira. Amira means the will of Hashem is knowable. And who knew it the best? Avraham. He came to know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from this world. And what did Hashem want from this world in Sefer Bereishis? 26 generations, right, until Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is 2448. It's considered 26 generations. When we do Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilom Chazo 26 times, that's 26 generations of Amira, of Hashem giving the world everything, being knowable in the world, but not forcing the world to respond, as Hashem changed that all completely by Aseres and Dibros, which is a Dibor, a Haggadah, where Hashem demands, now you have to live up to what I put you here for. But Bereishis is, there's a bunch of concepts that go together. The Sefer Bereishis, Amira, okay? Amira, which means that Hashem can be known. But how is Hashem known? Then Hashem's name in Bereishis, as we talked about again last week, Shakai. Sha'amar la'olamo dai. Dai means sufficient. The Amira was sufficient. Sha'amar la'olamo dai. The way Hashem related to the world through Amira was dai. So what's the greatest madrega modus operandi of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The greatest madrega is Avraham. Hashem is knowable. And it's enough that Avraham and his descendants operate in the world, as part of the world, guiding the world through Teva, no open miracles, no prophecy, kind of knowing what the will of Hashem is, teaching it, elevating people to that degree, following the will of Hashem, being good servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being very obedient, making Hashem's will known to the people. That's all that is achieved in Sefer Bereishis. Avraham is now he's getting a glimpse that's one madrega, but there's much, much more. There's knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, experiencing Nevuah, that you can convey to other people. That's Nisim, a Giloy Shechina, revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a whole nother level. It's not just being part of the world and guiding by example and by teaching. It's being elevating, being elevated, transcending, entering Hashem's spheres, the spheres that are beyond nature, the spheres of pure truth, the spheres that where a person is not just a good role model or teacher of Hashem's ways, but becomes one with and has a clear, direct experience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Hashem's ways, and feels the echad, the oneness between themselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's, he says, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, and I took you out of your previous world to put you into a whole nother world, to let you inherit the world of the higher worlds. And Avram says, but by what process? B'ma, through what will I come to be able to be on this madrega? Now, Hashem is not just answering a question. What Avram's doing here is he's requesting that Hashem give him whatever it takes to bring him to that madrega. In other words, what we're saying here is that Avraham was drawing out. He recognized that there had to be a process, and he brought it out. He drew it out. He brought it into reality. He forced it. What would that process be? That would be the gullus. Hashem said, okay, the way you're going to get there individually or as a nation is you're going to go through a period of being broken down, where all that the world believes to be true becomes revealed as a lie. And not only will you watch it happen, through you it will happen. That's what Avram really was asking for. Through you personally it will happen, and then you will be part of it. You won't just see the MS revealed. You will be experientially living through it. It will be revealed through you personally. And then you'll know it and you'll be one with it. That's how it becomes that Yisrael, Va'oraisa, V'kudsho Brichu, become one. That's how we become one. So really what happens here is, what we're saying here is, Rashi says here that Shehifriz Almidosov, what that means, Rashi says, Shehigdil. What does it mean? He expanded, he increased. And how did he increase? He really increased what he was capable of, what humanity could achieve. He increased, it says, Shehigdil, Lishol Almidosov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That he wanted more. He wanted an expansion, and therefore he pressed the issue. How can I get there? And Hashem said, yeah, you want it? Okay. I will give it to you. I will give it to you, but this is the way it has to come. We live through it nationally as a gullus, but each person lives through it also. A gullus, as we said, means you get to a point where everything you depended on, everything that was predictable, everything that you imagined to be true is destroyed around you, and you're left defenseless with nothing. Now, this idea is the idea of she'ela, of asking a question, which therefore forces an answer, and you won't get the answer without asking the question. Asking the question really draws out the answer from obscurity, from behind its veil, where it's kind of waiting. And when we talk about questions, today this is very, very in, but it's the nature of questioning itself. Think about the concept of a question. Not a question, as we said, to challenge, and not a question for a directive. A question of the core of something. What you're really doing is you are putting aside everything that you already know about the issue and recognizing that's not enough. I want more. For example, how did Isaac Newton discover gravity? Whatever everybody knew till then, he disregarded. Completely disregarded. And he asked Mazos, what is the core of this? What's happening here? He broke everything down, threw it all away, and started from the beginning. In other words, it's a yerida, it's a descent to the core of something. Interestingly, whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to allow people to have a deeper understanding of his ways, he always prefaces it with the word Vayera. This is a tremendous yesod that my grandfather points out. Notice that only rarely do you see in the Chumash one of our great leaders questioning the ways of Hashem. The first time that it happens is by Avraham. He says about Sodom, "What? How could it be? Shofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. The righteous judge, the judge of the whole world, won't do justice. What's going on here? How could you destroy a tzaddik in a Russia? Where does Avram get a right to talk like that? By the Akedah, he didn't say a word, right? By the Akedah, he doesn't say a word. Here by Sodom, he has so many strong questions about what Hashem is doing. And my grandfather points out that the reason Avram had a license, was allowed to ask Hashem, to question Hashem about his involvement in the world, the method that he was conducting the world with, is because it says first, Hashem said to Avram, I hear the cries of Sodom, the Ered, and I'm going to go down, and I'm going to see what it's all about. What do you mean go down? Hashem doesn't move. Go down means I will go down into the grasp of the human consciousness. I will, in a sense, lower my otherwise completely transcendent, unknowable self, so to speak. I will lower it so that a human being can understand me. I want the human being to know me, to know what I'm doing and why, the core. Not just what they should do, but what's at the core, what are the gears driving everything here. A much, much deeper revelation. Because Hashem said, I'm going to come down, that's why Avram had a right to ask questions. Why did Moshe in last week's parasha have a right to say, from the time I came to speak in your name, nothing's happened. Well, how are you conducting the world? What's going on here? It's only because Hashem said, I'm going to go down. He said, by Yaakov, ve'ered imach, I'm going to go down with you to Golus. And then he said to Moshe, ve'ered lahatzilo, I'm going to go down to save Klal Yisrael. That means I want you to have a deeper understanding of me through this Yeshua. I want you to understand how I work. I want the human mind to get to the next level. It's through Hashem coming down. Really a question. A question is where there's a Yerida. You go down to the core, to the basic element, to see the gears that are driving the machine. You disregard everything else. It's a form of deconstruction, we call it today, right? To deconstruct, throw away everything you know and look at and face, try to face the real truth. Try to let the truth emerge by disregarding everything else. You draw out the truth. Now, by questioning. Questioning is a search for an answer, but it demands that you let go of everything else. Now, here, by the way, in Parshas Vayeshev, in Perek Lamed Ches, in Bereshis, Lamed Ches, okay? I'm sorry, one second. Here, I'm sorry, Lamed Zayin. Here. When they threw Yosef into the bar, Perek Lamed Zayin. They threw Yosef into the bar. Pasuk Chav Ches. Look what it says. Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim. So these midyanim, these merchants, passed by the bar that Yosef was in. Vayimshechu, and they drew it up. Vayalu es Yosef min habor, and they raised him from the pit. Targum Uncle is here. Uncle says on the words Vayimshechu, that they drew it up, they drew it out of the depths, right? So Uncle is says in Perek Pasuk Chav Ches, right? It says v'negidu. That's the word what? Haggadah. Haggadah and She'ela, we said, go together. Haggadah is, because if you look in the Torah, by the way, the themes that it talks about by Vehigadah to Labincha, and the themes it talks about for Kiyish Alcha, when your son asks you, one leads to the next. To draw something out, to force something to come out of hiding. to talk in a way that's strong, that demands that a person recognize that they have to go further and ask questions. Avram, it says, is always compared to Eov in many ways. One of the comparisons is that Eov, it says, was like Avram. You know, the Satan was, there was an argument, a theoretical argument, who's greater. And Hashem said, see, Eov's great, and my Eov is very great. And Satan says, no one's greater than Avram. Anyway, it's a back and forth. So it says about Eov that he had, like Avram, a tent with four openings. And anybody that would come to his tent, if they loved meat, he would serve them meat. And if they loved wine, he would serve them wine. But Avram was greater because Avram took people, and if they loved meat, he would serve them wine. And if they loved wine, he would serve them meat. What this is trying to say is the same thing as Avram's question here. Avram was the father of many nations. Avram was great because he didn't just respond to the reality. In other words, he didn't just give people the meat because they liked meat. He cultivated a new appetite in them for something they didn't know that they could like. He cultivated an appetite in them for something more, something they were not familiar with. Avram is Sefer Bereishis. Avram is living as the teacher and the leader and Av Hamon Goyim and the role model, and the Amira, that world is die sufficient. It's sufficient to learn about Hashem, to follow Hashem's rules under these conditions without Nisim and without Nevuah. But Avraham is creating a thirst, and he's creating a hunger for much more. And that thirst and that hunger draws out. It draws. That creates a question, but the question is a seeking question. And it draws forth the response. Hashem is not going to respond unless first there's a question. And that's always how it works. You know, often a person is not bothered by something. They don't have a question. They'll never appreciate the answer. We say when somebody's not hungry, they don't appreciate food. But interestingly enough, the appetite comes with the eating. You start to teach a little bit. You start to reveal the higadita. And then you create a hunger, and then that hunger has to be increased and cultivated, and then that hunger asks a question. It's an uncomfortable question. Everybody knows that sometimes they're going to ask uncomfortable questions, and once they ask it, there's no turning back because it forces them down a road that they can't avoid. That's really what happens here. It's not that when we say that Avram didn't say, how do I know? Hashem says, okay, I'll give you a sign. Avram said, by what process will I come to know what I really want to know? I know what's going to happen, and it's called chashecha, darkness and dread, but I can't avoid it because that's the way that I'm going to draw out great, more understanding, more truth, more knowledge, more closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's inevitable. People know that they choose roads that will bring challenges upon themselves, but you can't avoid it. I had a friend who became a Balas Tshuva, and she had a man in her life that she knew that, you know, once she would go down this path, that would be the end. This was, you know, he would not follow her down this path. And that's a battle. But once you see the truth, the light at the, you know, glimmering, you can't not follow it, and it no matter what happens. And she went forward, and I remember her telling me this, and she said, but she didn't have an option anymore. Sometimes there's no turning back. And Avram knew what the moor was. Now, Sefer Shemos is the story of the moor. Of what else there was, the Giloy Shechina and the blending of Klal Yisrael into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, really. By the way, the concept of Trinity comes from us. Yisrael va'oraisa v'kutcha brichu. That union, that oneness, is the ultimate pleasure and schar and the purpose, the tachlis of the world. We've spoken about it as chibur, connection, right? As das, as the union of the ruchni and the gashmi. That moment is a moment that it's not entirely attainable and sustainable in this world, but we get glimpses of it, we get moments of it, and the pleasure of it gives us a sense of a sense of the that this is the eternal, everlasting pleasure of the future. We get moments of it here. It's unavoidable. Once you see that that's attainable, you have a taste of it, it's unavoidable. You must follow the path that leads to it. The avoda of a person is to get to a point where they taste it to a little degree. They allow themselves to glimpse it, so they'll want to then the hunger will start, and they'll want to follow the path no matter what it entails. Knowing that it could entail tremendous challenges, and therefore avoiding it is never the solution, because a human being knows what they're missing, and we're not happy really to live knowing that we never took the next step because it would be too challenging. So here, this is what's happening. The whole concept of Pesach is you want to draw out the question, and then the question itself draws forth the answer. And then once the answer is visible, but you see that it's the answer, then that's the path that a person goes down. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avram here, when he asked for the answer, he said, you're going to be slaves, avadim, and you're going to go through pain and suffering. But then you're going to come out, and Hashem uses the phrase, baruchush gadol, with great wealth, a great possession. Ruchush gadol is the euphemism, is the really the words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using for ultimately not just the moment of Matan Torah, but which we asked for again and again. Every Shabbos we say in Kedusha, Hu Yashmienu Shenis, let us hear again what we heard on Har Sinai. And we're talking about the first two divros that we heard directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? That's Ruchush gadol. Nobody really wants to not acquire a Ruchush gadol because they're too lazy to put in or too afraid of the process, that the process will be too difficult. With the Mesillas Yesharim says, and with this we're going to end and we'll take some questions, he says, you know, here in this, we people fool themselves and they say, all right, so I won't have the greatest spiritual level. I'm okay the way I am. It's good enough that I'm not doing anything terrible. I do the mitzvahs. I learn Torah, but I don't, okay, so if I don't get to the madrega of those people that are, addicted to, intoxicated with serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, learning and being immersed in it and having it consume them and be their whole world and their whole driving force. So, okay, gesundheit. I'm happy. I'm satisfied. I don't need the highest madrigas. He says, when a person gets to the next world and they say, so I won't be in the, have the clearest, the biggest schar. He says, it's such a lie, and we know it's a lie, that it's the most painful thing of all, because here in this world, he says, a person just walks around the neighborhood and they see someone who has a beautiful house or someone that has more beautiful physical things and they feel a jealousy. And especially, here's where it really kicks in, if somebody has the means to acquire that too, they know they really can, but they know they didn't put in the effort and that person did, and they're furious at themselves. They could enjoy all this, but it's their own shortcomings that are holding them back, and there's a jealousy, and there's a sense of some frustration at the self that comes out in all kinds of negative ways, anger and competition and dislike. And he says people are not okay when others who have just as much talent as them and they acquire much more than they have. Okay, they're not okay with it. It's not, they don't live with it very well. So they shouldn't fool themselves and think that, oh, I'll be very happy in the eternal world when I have much less than everybody else, just because I didn't want to put in the effort. Avram here is saying, if you see that there's something greater, you have to ask the question and draw out, force for yourself, really force out the answer, and then go through the process to get to it. And then you get Ruchush Gadol. And in the end, we don't know how this works, but it is true that it fills a person with so much bliss and joy and satisfaction that all the difficulties they went to acquire it, they're grateful for. And by the way, in this I will end, I met recently a woman, but she's not the first woman I met. I was giving a shiur for Torah Masorah in Manhattan. It's a very old woman sitting there, well into her 90s, and she was with her walker, and she was beaming at me with this beautiful smile, like this great biofeedback, you know, this like, what's it called? You get this feedback, right? This like with the nodding and beaming and grinning. I'm like, who is this lady? The most beautiful Hadras Panim. So I go over to her after. She comes over to me. She says, I want to tell you. I said, wait, before you say anything, who are you anyway? Like, anyway, turns out, who is this woman? She tells me a little bit. Someone else really filled me in about her. All the tzaras you can imagine. Everything, okay? Everything. The Holocaust and the one child who died and her own illness and the whole thing. And she says, but it wasn't until I was sick the last 4 months, she told me, that, and I was in the hospital after everything in my life, that I truly felt that the only one who was with me was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it filled me with so much joy. Now, I haven't experienced that. She was radiating a sense of whatever you get when everything is broken down and you know there's only one MS and you're attached to it, whatever that experience is, she looked like she was there, and somehow that's how the process works. That seems to be how it works. And what Avram's really doing here is he's saying we have to. He asked that question. Now I just want to address one more thing. Sorry, the Gemara says he was nenash. There was a punishment because he asked too much, and therefore we had to go through the gullus. Now that's very difficult to say. The Gemara uses the word it was an onish. It was a punishment, but we know that whenever we use the word onesh, we don't mean that God is vindictive. Oh, you asked too much, I'm going to slap you. That's never what a punishment means. Schar va'onesh doesn't mean that. We know that schar va'onesh are the natural consequences of who we are. Remember that? Schar is just the blossoming of who we are, so is onesh. Remember we talked about the brothers and Yosef? When he said, Ani Yosef, that was the onesh because it caused them so much humiliation and horror because of what they did. It's not a vindictive revenge. It's just the full blossoming of the truth that's very painful. I think that's what the Gemara means. It's not a punishment. Hashem doesn't punish in that type of way. It's Avram asked, so so that question leads itself to the uncomfortable reality, the chashech, the dread and the fear and all of the negativity that will be, you know, that are the answer to that question, which we refer to, you know, we call it reward and punishment, but it's the it's the comfortable or uncomfortable kind of extension of our place and of where we're going and of what we want. Okay, questions. Yes, go ahead.
You said the nature of Gerula is to ask questions. So can you explain to me what is the mitzvah then of living in Eretz Israel? And even though that is still with Gerula...
Today, you mean?
Today, yeah.
Today is... living in Eretz Yisrael, you know, is always a very important thing to do. But even in Eretz Yisrael today, because there's no nevuah and there's no revelation, and even living in Eretz Yisrael, it forces... the question, it's very interesting. The world has been trying to give an answer for a very long time. The Jews are rejected. The Jews are worthless people. The Jews don't have a right to exist. Okay, by our existing in Eretz Yisrael and the fact that we're indestructible, it's a question. It makes them, you know, they can't get away with that answer. It forces a question. And for the individual, there's always still the search, the hunger. Eretz Yisrael cultivates a great hunger in people for more and more and more, to the point that people are willing to give up everything just to be in Eretz Yisrael and to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. It does that to us.
So that's the ideal?
The ideal is to be hungry. Do you know how it talks about... Hinei yamim ba'im, days are coming, Hashem says, v'shlachti rav, I'm going to send a hunger into the land. And it's not a hunger for bread, and it's not a thirst for water. It's l'shmoa divrei Hashem. The hunger is the healthiest thing, the question. the desire for the answer, even if the answer is going to lead me down a path that is going to challenge me again and again and again, it's going to get me to my destination. Without being hungry, you won't ask the questions, you won't look for the answers, and you won't accept them. Yeah.
It's inquisitive, of course, but it's not like ech. You know what I'm saying? Like ech would mean like, how are you going to do this?
He's asking through what? Ba means in or with. It's the bays. Bima.
Bima.
In or with what will this happen? In other words, through what process?
He's not challenging God as God.
No.
Ech would be like, how are you going to do this?
Right. Okay. I mean, you're just strengthening what we're saying. He's saying, okay, I get it. There's a Ni Hashem out there, which is greater than what I have now. But how will I know it? Through what process?
How will I see it?
Through what through process? What do I have to go through to get there? And Hashem said, okay.
Really
of course it's not. It's not a challenge.
Right.
It's not a challenge. It's Avram's asking. He's drawing out a possibility that Hashem would not thrust on him on his own, but that's the greatness of Avram. He created a hunger. He drew out the possibility that he was, as we said, Moshe. He drew it out. He said, if it's going to be Gullah, so bring it to me. If that's what, you know, you get closer and closer to getting a glimpse of what you're going to have to endure, and then you allow it to find you because you need to go through it. We said it's not really an onesh. It's the natural consequence of the question. Yes, any other questions?
Why don't you look at it as Shutoshan Mikra? In Shutoshan Mikra, it's Bameh Zakeh Asher. He looks around, he sees all those people around him.
Because the reason we're not looking at it, Shutoshan Mikra, is because what we said in the beginning, the whole nature of Pesach is questions. The whole Gullah started with a question. What is the concept of a question? The question is, if the Gullus and the Geula are a response to a question, then the question must, in a sense, force it to happen. The question is not Hashem is just not responding. The question is drawing out the Gullus and the Geula. This is
learn
another way also. Seems not.
We didn't learn.
No, it's not true. It's not true. The truths become revealed through the cumulative effect. That is exactly how we learn. Okay, question. Anything else? Have a good day, everyone. Oh, Gwen, listen.